Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country 2 minutes at a time for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. We call it the two-minute drill. It starts in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Why wouldn't it? Scott Wisniewski, ESPN 540 is there. Scott, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. No complaints. Tell me, what was the reaction to Marquette being a five seed and getting Murray State, right? Probably appropriately seeded based upon their production as a team, but with what some people think may be the number one overall player taken in the NBA draft in Ja Morant. Before we talk about the game, tell me about what the reaction was when they saw who they had to play.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, coming into the tournament, Marquette had lost 5 out of 6 games. So they went from a team that was projecting to be a 3 seed to, I think, a team that was lucky to get that 5 seed because of the way they had played down the stretch. And then to draw Murray State, who... there's a couple teams. I think Wolford. I think those are some teams that are just really, really good that a lot of the country hasn't had a chance to see yet. But Murray State really proved yesterday that they're for real. And they kind of took it to Marquette and kind of punctuates a really terrible last month of the season for this Marquette team.
Yeah, and what is the feeling about Wojciechowski, their coach? I mean, is there confidence that he's the right guy for the job? We've heard people say he's the handpicked successor for Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, which is interesting. Are they satisfied with what he's doing for them at Marquette?
You know, there was some buzz. You know, I think a small, loud minority after last year was starting to call for some changes to be made. And most reasonable fans said, no, you know, I think they're on the uptick. And then this year, at one point, you know, they were looking, you know, like a team that was going to easily win the conference and maybe do some good things. And then they fell apart. There was a turnover. There was some really unimaginative offensive sets down the stretch. There was a slight hand injury to Marcus Howard. Yes, that was big, but not as big as just some of the sloppy play. And it almost feels like he lost this team. And you know what? As somebody who's been defending him and was excited to get Wojo here, it's hard to make the case for him being a great leader when his team just kind of imploded. And, you know, he's known as a good recruiter. And it's funny we mentioned that because his 2020 class, his class of 2020 looks really good. But next year's class looks not great. I mean, there's still some good players here, but Howard's going to be gone, and that's going to be tough to replace. I don't think they can replace that internally. I think they're going to take a couple steps back, and if they look sloppy when they do it, he could be gone at the end of next season.
Yeah. All right. We'll see how that goes. That's interesting. How about Wisconsin and Oregon? Do you like the Badgers' chances of getting by the Ducks, which are playing very well coming down the stretch?
I don't. But then again, Wisconsin's been such a Jekyll and Hyde team, they could win by 12 today, right? The problem is Oregon defends the rim well, and that's where Wisconsin makes their hay. They don't shoot particularly well. They go dark for stretches. I'm talking about the Badgers, where they could go 5 minutes without scoring. And I really think the Achilles heel for them, especially tournament time, is going to be their poor free throw shooting. I think Oregon beats them. I think Oregon beats them by at least 4 or 5 points, and it's going to be because there'll be a stretch in the game this afternoon where Wisconsin will go 4 minutes without a bucket, and they'll miss some crucial shots from the free throw stripe down the stretch.
So you're picking Oregon there. That'll be interesting. Does that lead to any issues with the coaching staff if they don't advance? Because it's not been the same as it was under Bo Ryan.
No, it hasn't. And people have to understand, though, with Bo Ryan here, that was, I think, the pinnacle of what Wisconsin basketball's been. there's been some rumblings. I'm willing to not throw the baby out with the bathwater yet and give Greg Gard at least another year. The team hasn't quit on him. They've got a couple deficiencies as it relates to shooting the ball. They still defend well, but they don't have the same type of athlete that they had here with Bull Ryan either. I like Ethan Happ, but I certainly don't think he's one of the top five players we've seen in the last decade in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I think that's part of the problem. He's going to have to recruit better, though. If he doesn't start bringing in a few more of those higher echelon players, I'm not talking five-star guys, but some solid three-and-a-half-star guys, the seat could get a little hotter, but I don't think it gets hot this year.
Chiefs signed Bashaud Breeland to play corner for them, played with the Packers last year. What did the Chiefs get?
He's a good player. And, you know, if he didn't have the foot injury at the end of the 2017 season and through that offseason, he would have signed for a big-time deal. Packers got him as a bargain midway through the season. If he's healthy, I think he's a good player. I think he's one of the key losses for the Packers. Well, the Packers have done some good things in free agency. He's one guy I would have liked to see them wrap up, but they couldn't because they took the whole cap hit on a Nick Perry release. It left them a little bit short, and they need some of that money for the draft. So it's unfortunate because I think he's a pretty good player. I think you're going to like what you see there.
All right. That's good to hear. That's some good news. Scott Wisniewski in Milwaukee. Always great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too. Enjoy the rest of March Madness, at least the first couple rounds.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina.
So talk to Brett Jensen, WBT and WFNZ in Charlotte, North Carolina. Brett, how are you, bud?
Just fine, sir, buddy.
Let's start with Roy and getting to go through Kansas City on his way to hopefully another Final Four for him. What was Roy and North Carolina's fans' reaction to potentially seeing Kansas in Kansas City?
So, you know, Roy did what Roy usually does. As a matter of fact, pretty much like he's exactly what he did during the ACC tournament about the possibility of facing Duke. And his reaction was he pulled a Rhett Butler and said, frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn about all that. And that was his direct quote. And then, but the fans are really upset because, you know, these things just randomly happen by the NCAA. Everyone knows that there's absolutely no predetermined or trying to create matchups that would have Roy Williams having to play his old team Kansas in Kansas's backyard. No, not at all. That would never happen on purpose, purely by random. And so, but yeah, there are a lot of Carolina fans that are upset, and they're, to be honest with you, I mean, all the Carolina fans are hoping that Auburn takes care of business against the Jayhawks.
Yeah, and so they'd rather play Auburn. I would think that they'd probably rather play Kansas. The bumpy season it's been for Kansas since they lost a couple of key pieces and Udoka Azubuike and LeGerald Vick. I would probably, if I were them, be rooting for Kansas to be the team they face.
Well, I
know it'd be a home court, but the better team
right
now appear not yesterday's game notwithstanding. For the last 2 weeks, last month has been Auburn.
Well, you know, basically the thought of it is, okay, it still says Kansas on the chest, and they're the blue blood. Auburn's a football school, and it's still Kansas, and it's still in Kansas' backyard. And I think that's why, I mean, it's just the fact that it's Kansas, if that makes any sense, just the name itself, it tends to strike fear in people. I mean, you know, there was a reason why they won whatever it was, 14 or 15 straight Big 12 titles. So, yeah, but people are hoping. I'm being sincere when I tell you this. Like, everyone is calling in, whether it's sports talk shows or whatever, saying they really are now becoming Auburn fans.
Yeah, okay. We'll see where it goes. What's at stake for Roy Williams? I've talked about this. If he was able to win this tournament, he would have won – played for the national title 3 of the last 4 years, won 2 of the last 3 championships. He'd win his 4th. He'd be only one behind Mike Krzyzewski for total championships won. This is, you know, quietly, like, I'm not saying there's pressure for him to win it all or anything, but if he does, man, he really goes from being, one of the best that ever coached to, no, let's talk about where he ranks amongst the best. You get to 4, and the company is Mike Krzyzewski, it's Adolph Rupp, and it's John Wooden. I mean, he'd be one of 4 guys to do it. Is that being discussed at all around North Carolina?
Yeah, and as Tar Heel fans will tell you, well, it's not really Roy Williams 4 and Mike Krzyzewski 4. It would be Roy Williams 4 and Mike Krzyzewski 2 since Roy joins North Carolina. Yeah. So, like, they don't even count the Kansas years. Like, they're only counting, this became the North Carolina. He's got four championships, and K doesn't. So, which is, shows you how crazy these Carolina Duke fans are. But, yeah, no, I mean, you're 1,000% correct. And, you know, and you can speak to this more than, you know, anybody out here can. You know, it almost seems like when you had all those opportunities in Kansas that they were almost wasted by not winning a championship, winning at least one. And I just remember him being criticized for not being able to win a championship, you know, way back when. But, I mean, if he could have just gotten one at Kansas during all those times when he was favored to do so. But, yeah, I mean, four championships, how are you not considered, you know, one of the five, you know, one of the greatest coaches ever? But I will tell you this, no matter what he does, he will always be secondary to Dean Smith here. And I think, honestly, Roy Williams, even if you put him on a lie detector test, would think himself to be secondary to Roy or to Dean Smith.
I don't know. I mean, he wins a fourth one. I mean, he's already got more than Dean Smith ever won. I know how you know, fabled ground talking about, you know, Dean Smith is, but, man, I'll tell you what, he's...
Well, you also got to remember that Dean coached a good portion of his career when the conference only set one team to the NCAA.
That's true. That's true. But he would get to the NCAAs and not finish. I mean, he'd get to the Final Four and not win it.
Yep.
But so, yeah, no, they're both great coaches. There's no doubt about that. It'll be interesting. I hope we see Roy coming through Kansas City because I think that'll be a lot of fun here in these parts. All right. How about Duke? They're the overall tournament favorite, and I think they've earned that. What would scare you if you were a Blue Devils fan? What team is sitting out there that you think could cause the biggest problems for Duke?
Obviously, you know, most people are going to say Michigan State. You know, that's you know, they look at that. You know, Michigan State has got a lot of got a lot of veterans, and they're generally big and athletic. That one's a little nervous, but I think the one that's flying under the radar a little bit that people really aren't talking about is a possible Sweet 16 matchup against Virginia Tech. I mean, you're talking about a team that knows Duke inside and out. They've played very close a lot of games. They've played very close games. I think Duke or Virginia Tech even beat Duke when they didn't have Zion. So, you know, I think that's one of the teams that people really aren't talking about just because they know each other so well. You know, and Virginia Tech's a four seed, so it's not like they're a slouch. So I think that's one, you know, and again, I know you and I have talked about this a lot this year, about the one weakness for Duke is the fact that they don't shoot the ball well. I mean, they rank in the 330s when it comes to three-point shooting. And no team has ever shot below, I think, 30% from three-point range and won the NCAA tournament. And I think Duke's at, like, right at 30% or 29%. I mean, it's just... So if you get a team that gets a little warm from the outside, or you see what happened, like, again, Gonzaga, I mean, North Carolina was 4 of 27. 4 of 27 from 3 and lost by 1 point and had a chance to win at the buzzer. So, I mean, there is some concerns if you're Duke, and I think it all centers around the three-point shooting.
Yeah, no, I can see it. I can see it happening. I don't have them winning at all. I'm not sure where they're going to lose one, but... I've got them losing in the Final Four, but I just think it's not going to be Duke. Just somewhere that shooting comes in to get them. But we'll see. They're an incredibly talented team. There's no doubt about that. Brett Jensen in North Carolina. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, Soren. Thanks, buddy. You can find me
in St. Louis. Scotty Warman, Fox Sports Midwest, is in St. Louis, Missouri. Scotty, how are you?
Doing great, Petro. How are you?
I'm doing well. Tell me, the contract extension for Paul Goldschmidt, I assume this was expected. They didn't acquire him to have him just be there for a year. Are you surprised at what the numbers are, though?
Not surprised at the numbers, really, to be honest with you, Seren. I think I'm more surprised at the timing. I mean, heck, the Cardinals just acquired him. He hasn't even played one game at Busch Stadium, much less any other major league ballpark. But I guess, and I'm sure you probably talked about it on your show, this is kind of where we're going with this phase. You know, you got Trout signed, Arenado is now signed, and now Paul Goldschmidt is signed. And knowing what we've seen over the past two off seasons, I guess this is, you know, kind of changed the direction of the mind of, I don't know if it's player or agent or a combination of both with some of these big name guys. But obviously, when we're sitting here, Kimbrel and Keuchel are still sitting there waiting to get a phone call and see who they're playing for, I guess. and these guys want to sit through a long period of time. So from that standpoint, Petro, a little surprised. But as far as the numbers are concerned, I think when you really add it up, it adds up to what, you know, Paul Goldschmidt is as a player. He's a complete player. He's one of the best first basemen in all of Major League Baseball. And, you know, obviously the Cardinals want a cornerstone type player in the middle of their lineup, a quiet leader in their locker room to go with a guy like a Yadier Molina for the next 5 years. And so I think this, you know, the fit with Goldschmidt and the Cardinals, I think, fits perfectly. And, you know, the Cardinals obviously didn't have to do much selling for Paul Goldschmidt to just decide that, you know, if this is his last contract in his career, that he's going to, you know, stay in the Gateway City.
He's 31. He'll turn 32 before the season's out. So 5 years, I mean, that's 31, right. 32, 33, 34, and 35-year-old seasons. Is that surprise you a little bit that, you know, I thought he would probably be tacking on 3 or 4 years on it, but is it, maybe that's what it took to get him signed was the 5 years. Any regrets on that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, for everything that you know, when the Cardinals initially, you know, signed him, they said, look, you know, we're just going to play this thing out like Paul wants to play it out. And then when they had their winter warm-up, the off-season thing with the fans here, you know, Mr. DeWitt even came down and said, hey, we want to sign this guy. So obviously Paul Goldschmidt said from the get-go he really doesn't want to go through the public to talk about it. And this was, you know, they honored that and they did it behind the scenes and they did the deal. But anything that you heard, you know, with the age situation, that it was probably more than likely going to be about a 5 or 6 year deal maximum, just like you said, Seren, because of his age. We're not talking about the 26-year-old Machado or Harper here. We're talking about a guy that's a little bit more of a grizzled veteran. So I think the years, and I really do think the money kind of sets up nicely. In fact, I think probably some people think that maybe the Cardinals might have gotten a better deal, that he wasn't just a 5-year, $150 million deal. So, but again, you have to also consider the age. It's 32, not 26, 27, 28, something like that, when they're starting this in the prime of their career, or he is starting this new contract at the prime of his career.
All right, tell me about the St. Louis Blues as we come down the stretch run. They're firmly in the 3 seed. I don't think they're going to blow it, you know, coming down and you know, over the course of the last 8 games with a 6-point lead. But are they a threat to do any damage with Calgary? And I know San Jose's cooled off here. They've lost 4 in a row. They were red hot. But Calgary, San Jose, and then, of course, the defending Western Conference champion Knights, are the Blues good enough to get there? And now the good news is all three of those are over in the Pacific Division.
Right.
So they won't have to mess with them for a little while. But are they good enough to get through at least one of those teams, whichever one might come out?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we've talked about this before, that, you know, at the beginning of the season, the Blues were considered one of the better teams after all their offseason acquisitions. And they were, you know, started 2019, the worst teams in the National Hockey League. And then all of a sudden they started playing maybe even better than what most people expected. They were, I mean, Seren, during February, they were completely dominant. I mean, they play the Tampa Lightning on Saturday. Tampa's still winning. They've already grabbed the President's Cup trophy, the best record in the National Hockey League with 3 weeks left of the season. They're still beating teams. They've won the last two nights, back-to-back nights, including the Washington Capitals, the defending Stanley Cup champions. But the Blues went into their arena about a month ago, and they did something that no other team's been able to do, the highest scoring team in the National Hockey League. That's shut them out, but even shut them out in their own arena, which is very difficult to do. I've just seen the Blues, and right now, if the season was over, they're paired up with Nashville, and I know Nashville is a very talented team, but the Blues have dominated the Nashville Predators. So is this a team that, you know, if they get on a roll again, could they make some noise and maybe even make it to a conference final? They have that potential. There's no doubt about it. I think the bottom line for them right now is to make sure that they maintain their health. The goaltending has turned around with their rookie goaltender, Jordan Binnington. And if they can do that, and they're really getting a lot more goal scoring besides their top line of Tarasenko, Shin, and O'Reilly, that, yes, definitely, I think there's a possibility that they could, you know, just be a team that just appears in the first round. They definitely have the opportunity, Seren, to maybe make some noise if they're rolling, especially like they were in February.
Scotty Warman in St. Louis, great stuff, buddy. We always appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, Petro. Thanks, bud.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. What team holds the NCAA tournament single game record for 3-point accuracy? And the NCAA says it's with minimum of 7 field goals made. So 4-4 didn't count. Got to hit at least 7 to qualify. Who holds the single game NCAA tournament record for 3-point accuracy?
With at least 7?
Mm-hmm. At least 7 makes.
Villanova against Kansas last year in the Final Four. Sure as hell felt like it.
It did, but no.
Okay. I don't know.
This team was 8 of 9 in the first round win over Georgia in 1987. They are the Kansas State Wildcats.
Ooh. In 87?
8 of 9.
So was that Henson?
Mm-hmm. No, that would have been Mitch Richmond. And was Henson on that 88
yeah.
team?
Okay, he was on the 88.
Okay, well, that would have been Steve Henson then.
Yeah.
The two other teams shot at least 80%. Maryland against UMass in 1994, 8 of 10. The other team, K-State against Purdue, Sweet 16, 1988. So two of the three best ever was that Mitch Richmond group.
I like it. It's a pretty good time to remember things for the K-State Wildcats. Pretty good shooting teams, no doubt. Jesse Newell is a great shooter, as I understand it. That's what I've heard. It's what I've been told, anyway. Kansas beat writer for the Kansas City Star. He's brought to you by our friends at the 23rd Street Brewery. Saw my buddy Matt Llewellyn just yesterday, as a matter of fact. 23rd Street Brewery is a full-service brew pub with daily food and drink specials, home of the best happy hour anywhere in Lawrence. They're open daily from 11 to midnight. Get over there and watch some tournament action right now. All the big screens you want. Great food. In fact, they serve all the way up until 10 o'clock, so you can get there now. Stay all the rest of the day. You can find out more at brew23.com and say hello to our buddy, Matt Llewellyn, when you are there. Mr. Newell, sir, welcome to the Sprint Guest Line. How are you, my friend?
Doing all right. I hate to tell you, Seren, you have some bad sources if they told you that
really?
I'm a shooter.
Really? Okay. All right. More of a gritty defender type? Is that how you describe your game?
More of nothing, really.
Undersized post player?
What I do really well is, after thinking about the game of basketball and learning about floor spacing, I'm really good at running down to the other end and going to the corner, so at least my man can't defend somebody else.
There you go. Well done. You're the guy that you just get him out of the way to try to open things up for the players who can really play. But what I appreciate is your selflessness, excuse me, and doing what it takes to help your team win. That's what proves you're the ultimate team player, Jesse. I'm proud of you. Well done.
It's all about knowing your strengths and your many, many, many weaknesses.
That it is. But that it is. All right, let's talk about the big win yesterday. I liked Kansas to win that game, but nationally, Northeastern was a pick that a lot of people thought could pull the upset. It never, ever, ever had a chance once the game tipped off. Why? Why did the national pundits have it so wrong?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just, I've written about this for a lot of the year, just how KU has struggled to defend the three-point shot, and it seemed like Northeastern was sort of the matchup that could exploit that. Now, I went back on my quick scout before the game yesterday where I'm making against the spread pick for every single game and kind of said exactly what you did. Now, I didn't see a 30-point victory coming, but I basically just said, look, there are some things that Northeastern does that can be scary for Kansas. There are some things that other teams have exploited, but Vegas might be overreaching just a little bit here because if we look at the course of the season, Kansas is better than Northeastern, and if we look at Northeastern's big weakness, it's that they can't defend the interior. And I've just seen enough games watching Bill Self teams that if his team can get to the rim and not have much resistance at the rim, then a lot of times they can have a lot of success. And you saw that yesterday. I think it was 50 points of KU's 87 or whatever it was, something around there, were in the paint. Devon Dotson was getting to the rim at will when he wanted to. Dedrick Lawson had no problems going inside against whatever big man Northeastern was throwing at him. So you sort of have to look at these things from both aspects. And while on paper you could see certain ways, hey, maybe Northeastern can get this sort of thing going, you have to look at the flip side as well, whereas, hey, Kansas hasn't seen this sort of interior defense in a long, long time, especially with the schedule that they've played. So KU took advantage of that. I think Northeastern missed a few shots in the lane early that kind of got them in their heads, and they started seeing ghosts of Mitch Lightfoot in the lane and started maybe short-arming their shots and looking like Jesse Newell playing at the local rec center. And from there, it was really off Kansas, and the lack of confidence really played over to the Huskies shooting. So a good one for Kansas, obviously. This is a great result in a season that they've been inconsistent for most of the year. But I think that's maybe what people were looking at. Maybe they laser-focused on the three-point part and didn't step back for the big picture, which was Northeastern had some things that KU could exploit as well.
And maybe the best part of the equation is they win easy by 34 points. And Dotson and Lawson, really the two guys that they've come to be able to count on, were good. But McCormick, kind of no-shows. Grimes, offensively, no-shows. That's a good sign. It's not like this was a perfect game where eight guys were all clicking, yet they still were able to win by such a wide margin. McCormick can have a better day. Grimes can have a better day. Both of them have had better days recently. Let's start with McCormick first, though. He had three great games in a row and now seems to have back-to-back up the bus. Why? What's going on?
Well, yesterday was just a matchup. I actually talked to him in the locker room afterwards, and Bill Self was honest with him, basically told him before the game, look, to defend Northeastern the way that Bill Self wanted to defend them, they had to go four guards and basically switch everything and only leaving Dedrick Lawson as the big man in the middle. So while David McCormick started that game, Bill Self sort of had in his mind the whole week to kind of pull him out early, maybe try to win the tip, and then from there go with four guards to try to really frustrate the Huskies and not let them get any confidence on the perimeter. So I think that one is less of a David McCormick thing and more of just a matchup thing. And this is also maybe what we have to bring into account when we look at some of these NCAA tournament things in the line and trying to figure out where these should go, is that Bill Self is in the Hall of Fame for a reason. You know, he looked at this matchup. He saw what his team had. He saw a certain way that he thought defensively that they could succeed. And sure enough, KU came out with a really good performance. I'd be less concerned about him than maybe some other ones, just because I think David knew going into this game, and the coaches were pretty upfront about this going into the game, that because when he's in there with Dedrick Lawson, KU would have to hedge more. It opens up more three-point shots. You know, you get in what coaches call rotation. You're kind of scrambling defensively. To avoid all that, you go smaller. And Bill Self kind of had the strategy to go small in that game. So for David, you know, a quiet game for him, had some okay moments in the second half, but I think this is all going to be a quiet moment for him just because of what Bill Self thought he was going to do going into the game.
All right, now they are, even though they won impressively and Auburn did everything they could to lose the game, they just ran into a New Mexico team that just wouldn't take it and win. They did everything they could to lose the game, and finally the clock ended and one of them had to win it. That's the only reason why we got a winner in that damn game. But yet Auburn's favored. So what do you make of that?
Well, I've been the guy a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I got AP poll attacked because I had Auburn over LSU in my AP poll rankings, and I think since then Auburn's reeled off about eight or nine straight victories. So I've been the high team on Auburn all year. You know, the advanced numbers love them, and this is kind of what it goes back to if you look at that. For the course of the whole season, if you go possession by possession and adjust the numbers, that Auburn has been a tick more efficient than KU has been. And that's why they're ending up as a slight favorite in this game. Plus, you add in the fact that KU had basically no crowd yesterday. I mean, maybe there were some people there, but nearly not much noise. Auburn fans made a lot more noise than KU fans did, and you can't add in a, you know, 2-point bump that you might give KU at the Sprint Center. If this is a true neutral type of game, then that's why the Tigers are favored. And once again, it's dangerous to go too far in the matchup because there's going to be positives and weaknesses on both sides, but KU kind of runs into the same sort of thing where you can at least envision a scenario where they could struggle against this particular Auburn team. The three things you look at right away is Auburn shoots even more threes than Northeastern did. So, okay, you fixed that for a game, but obviously that was against a Northeastern team that was sort of flawed inside. They can't provide the same sort of rim presence or athleticism that Auburn can when it comes to inside. Auburn forces a bunch of turnovers. We know this Kansas team has been up and down with turnovers, more bad on the road and in kind of crazy environments than they have been at home, but sometimes they have gotten rattled and turned the ball over, and this has been a high turnover team, at least when you consider some of Bill Self's teams of the past. And then the third thing is just the transition that they can go against. And not only that, they give up a bunch of threes. And this Kansas team, if you look lately, they kind of hit that surge around early February where, you know, I wrote about Devontae Graham had a FaceTime message he sent the team before the Texas Tech game and said, hey, you guys need to shoot the ball. Like, don't listen to what coach says. Like, if you're open shooter, you turn down more open shots than any team I've ever seen. And KU came out firing that game and just boat raced Texas Tech, and it kind of started this little surge of offense that KU had for about five games. Ever since then, though, they've kind of backed off, and they haven't attempted as many from three. Now, a game against Northeastern, you can understand that. Northeastern obviously did not have the rim protectors that a team like Auburn does. Super athletic bigs inside, guys that can block shots, and it's going to be a very, very difficult matchup for Peter Clawson, who has struggled all year against like that athleticism, because if we know what he is and know what he isn't, he is not long and he's not super jumpy or springy. So this is going to have to be a game where KU, I think, makes some outside shots and takes some outside shots, because if they're hesitant, then they might turn it over. And if they turn it over, Auburn's got a chance at transition points on the other end. And so this is going to be one where maybe Devontae Graham needs to get his cell phone back out again and tell KU to fire up all the shots they can, because that has been the biggest defensive weakness for Auburn this season. And if KU doesn't take advantage of it, they kind of run the risk of passively playing themselves out of this game by playing right into the Tigers' hands.
So how do you expect them to play? What lineup? Are we going to see four guards? Are they going to play two bigs? What do you expect against Auburn?
KU probably go back to what they did before, and then Bill Self can kind of go, based off of what he sees out there. I mean, this is not the Northeastern thing where they're playing undersized because they're a CAA team. You know, they're colonially athletic and super unathletic guys, that sort of thing. I mean, you're talking about Auburn, which has just got a bunch of really athletic guys. So it could be Dave McCormick. It could be Mitch Lightfoot. They could match up big. Probably it's going to be more for Bill Self based off of who's playing well and what rotation they might get into. But like I said, this is going to be a tough game for KU to score inside. And not only that, a team like Auburn that can really get after you and pressure you, some of those openings, you got to take them. If you see an open three, that's why you mentioned Quentin Grimes not playing as well as he has earlier in the season. This is a game, man, if ever this this March of Grimes thing is going to happen that KU fans have been talking about on social media for a while, this would be a huge game for it, because he needs to step confidently into these open shots. He really has probably KU's best form of the guys left on the roster and the most confidence to shoot those of anybody that we've seen. So he's going to be a big key, and a poor shooting performance from him, it could take KU out of the NCAA tournament, but if he doesn't shoot them, that might also take him out as well. So this is kind of an intriguing matchup for KU in trying to maybe overcome some of the demons that have haunted them throughout the course of the season. If they do that, there's a pretty great reward in Kansas City, because nobody really expected the Jayhawks to end up in the Sweet 16 there. And if they did it, then sort of the old cliche, you know, they would really have accomplished something this season that 2 weeks ago maybe a lot of people wouldn't have thought. And then you can get in front of a semi-home crowd and see what you can do in the NCAA tournament second weekend.
So what's at stake for Bill Self? Anything? Or is it just like, listen, finally had kind of a down year for a lot of reasons, some out of his control. Or maybe all of them, you could say, out of his control, depending upon how things work out with the FBI investigation. I've been playing this game of what's at stake, because I always like to think about, okay, what's it going to mean and how are we going to write the story depending upon what someone does. He gets the first round, so it's 13 straight years without losing in the first round. That's an incredible accomplishment. So that goes away. What else is left that we'll be talking about after they go out, wherever it is, if they do go out?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's sort of funny. KU doesn't end up in these situations very often where they're a four seed, so not much is expected. You know, they've just reeled off one seed, two seed, one seed, one seed, one seed, two seed, one seed. And so it's sort of difficult to play over your head when there's so many expectations for you to either get to the Elite Eight or the Final Four just to simply play to your seed. So I don't know that it would be a colossal failure if KU lost this game, like we talked about there. They're an underdog. I mean, Vegas is not expecting to win, but it seems like it could open up a potential narrative or a potential season that just KU hasn't had the opportunity to have so often because of their overwhelming regular season success. And it is an opportunity. You know, if KU beats Auburn, all of a sudden they're probably playing North Carolina in Kansas City at Sprint Center, and Bill Self has had his share of success against Roy Williams. And it's just another one of those games where it's like, okay, I mean, why would KU have any pressure in that game? I mean, I know it's Carolina, I know it's Roy, but, I mean, they're going to be big underdogs, and everybody would expect Roy Williams to advance in that bracket. It just sort of creates this – it could create a March dynamic that is very unfamiliar in Lawrence, which is like, hey, this team advanced further than people thought, and now oh, they're in the round that nobody thought they would be in, at least a couple weeks ago. I understand they were preseason number one, so we're not basing it off of that. But it just seems like this is an opportunity. And KU might not win, but if they can get by this stretch right here, all of a sudden you look ahead and you say, wow, if KU could play North Carolina and beat them, and then maybe have Kentucky in Sprint Center and beat them, I mean, this all of a sudden kind of becomes remembered as a very different season than what the first 5 months you would have associated with it. So, I don't think too much is at stake. I don't think built up a legacy is at stake, anything crazy like that. But it does seem like this would open a door that KU could get to, and all of a sudden they could start to have a sort of special season with the opportunities that would be out there coming up next week in Kansas City.
Where's the confidence level of the team, and maybe like a Quentin Grimes, who could be that, you mentioned the March of Grimes. Where's the confidence level in the entire team, but also in Quentin Grimes to just keep firing?
I think his confidence level is high, and I wrote a story earlier this week about him and his relationship with his dad, and kind of how he's always been. He's Mr. Drill. Like, he goes and shoots by himself 5 to 6 days a week with a manager. You know, he kind of gets in his routine. And you've seen lately, I talked with KU assistant coach Curtis Townsend about this. And earlier on in the season, he was trying to play more like a point guard, which is what he did in high school, and heck, might be what he is at the next level. But when he would catch the ball, it'd be like a jab step, you know, kind of trying to make a move, that sort of thing, kind of like you would do if your high school teammates weren't very talented and you wanted to try to create something. But now what Curtis Townsend is seeing that he likes is that catch, shot, or catch, move the ball. And it's sort of been an awkward fit. I think that Curtis Townsend said, you know, it was like you're trying to fit the pieces of the puzzle together and they're not quite fitting. It seems like Quentin Grimes is becoming more comfortable doing and showing what he can do and doing that while playing inside of KU's offense, and that maybe that didn't always mesh or that didn't always come together earlier in the season. So I think his confidence would be higher than maybe anybody else's. Like I said, with Dieter Lawson, that'll be a question maybe based off of how it starts tomorrow, just because he had so much success in this game against Northeastern. But he's been one of their main three-point threats here lately. So if he can pull some of those guys away from the rim, maybe that's a way for him to get a matchup going. You know, Devon Dotson, he should shoot it when he's open, but other than that, he's a limited three-point shooter. Ojai Agbaji's been in a pretty bad slump lately. So, yeah, this might be the Grimes show tomorrow. If he can step into a few and make a few, it could be a huge boost for Kansas. And kind of like I said earlier, I mean, I think they had about a five-game stretch where they were really feeling good about their shots, that there was confidence there. They were firing up no matter what. I think some of that has waned recently, to be completely honest with you. It doesn't mean they can't get it back after two or three makes in a row and they're feeling good, but I think a lot of this will come down to Quentin Grimes, because he seems to be the guy that is willing to stick his neck out there and take the brunt of it if he doesn't make shots. But he seems brave enough and confident enough to take those shots. And KU is definitely going to need to make them tomorrow against Auburn if they want to succeed offensively. And like I said, avoid all those turnovers that Auburn can definitely get against you.
The Kansas City Star's Jesse Newell is with us, handles the KUB. Time for our final four questions, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. I will start you with this, Jesse. David Beatty does or does not get his $3 million when it's all said and done?
I think he will get money, but I think that this is probably one of those things they're going to be settling out of court with one of those arrangements we won't be privy to. So I think he'll definitely get his money, but it'll probably be something that's settled.
Ooh, I don't know. I think this might be one. When you have the law firm immediately send out a press release to everybody in the press, I think you're in it to win it for a fight. But that's interesting. I certainly respect your opinion. You're closer to it more so than I am, but that just strikes me as a guy who's here to fight. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out when it's all said and done. All right. Who is your final four?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot here.
I'll help you out with
it. I did fill out a bracket. I think I'm with like three of my buddies or something that has no stakes to it whatsoever. So like the worst type of brackets that you can fill out. But I know I went, here we go, Michigan State, Virginia, Gonzaga, and Houston.
Michigan State, Virginia, Gonzaga, and Houston. There you go, man. You and Nate Taylor from The Athletic liking you some Houston. And our buddy J.D. LeBeau, who took half their squad in our player pool. Love him some Houston. All right, who do you got for the national champion?
I got Gonzaga and Virginia, a little bit more chalky there.
But who wins it?
I've got Virginia winning. I just figured after last year and what happened that nobody else would be taking Virginia this year, just for fear of what happens to them in March.
Yeah, me and you. I got Virginia as well, so I'm on the same side of that one. All right, and finally, which Big 12 team goes the furthest?
You know, I guess I'll die on this hill. I still really like Texas Tech, and I love what they do defensively. Chris Beard obviously has done an amazing job, and then Jarrett Culver lifts them offensively. So I'll stick with Texas Tech. In this one, I think they've been the best team in the Big 12 for the course of the season.
All right, 10-10 right now with about 11 to go in the first, Texas Tech and North Kentucky, just to give you an idea of where they are. Meanwhile, Oklahoma, who you didn't take, is crushing Ole Miss 53-38. They just started the second half there, but good sticking with Tech. So we'll see how it plays out. Jesse, always great stuff. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star, brought to you by our friends at the 23rd Street Brewery. If you're looking for a place in Lawrence to go watch some NCAA tournament basketball, the 23rd Street Brewery, that's where you need to be. They've got food going all the way till 10 o'clock. Great, great happy hour as well. It's the 23rd Street Brewery. You can find out more at brew23.com. We'll take a break, come back. Stump the Chump's coming up in a little bit. I'll give you an update on all the scores. Oklahoma 55-40, Cincy 59-55 over Iowa, and Texas Tech leads Northern Kentucky 14-13. K-State, the next team to start, they start up at 1 o'clock.
You're in the program.
All right, wrapping up hour number three here in the program. Stump the Chumps coming up next. Peter Yates Enoch joining us here in the program. I want to thank our friends at Rockin' Brews Restaurant. What great, great hosts they are, and a great spot to go watch some NCAA tournament basketball. If you're ducking out of work right now, calling it a week, get over to Rockin' Brews. TVs everywhere, all the games on, and then, of course, that great made-from-scratch menu, so good. Appetizers, $5, half price on all the taps. Happy hour all throughout the tournament. Take advantage of it. Rockin' Brews is in the Prairie Fire. That's basically the development there at 135th and Knoll in the southwest corner. And they were just absolutely fantastic. Kyle and all the guys and gals were just great to us. Hung out there all the way up. It's like time for dinner. I was like, I got to go. I can't have dinner here. But I did have the spicy wings.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Strong.
Awesome. Our buddy Jim, the dorky Duke fan, got them. They were great.